Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Thursday, November 29th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and you guessed it, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I apologize about that few moments of dead air. I'm not sure exactly what happened. The entire switchboard just froze up, went blank, and I tried to get back in there, and it said connection failure and all this other stuff. So must have been a glitch up there in New York with Blog Talk Radio, because everything on my end was working fine. So apologize for the little technical glitch we had there, but we seem to be back broadcasting live again right now. And as someone said in the chat room, y'all kept the chat room warm for me, and I appreciate that as the chat room slowly but surely starts to fill up. We appreciate you tuning in today. We have an absolutely fabulous show today. You're not going to want to miss it. So glad you're here. Get those Chicken Whisperer notebooks out. Get ready to take lots of notes. We have Dr. Bruce Charlton, poultry scientist, PhD professor. He's joining us today. This is the show we've all been waiting for the last few weeks. We've been talking about it and talking about it quite a lot actually this week. But Dr. Charlton's going to walk us through. Hopefully you've gotten all the notes from the show. I've been posting those on our Facebook and Twitter pages the last couple of days. So hopefully you've gotten kind of the outline so you can follow along as we go through the steps-by-step process of doing a necropsy on one of your chickens, or a chicken. So it's going to be a great episode today. We've had some great episodes all week. On Monday, we had Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. He taught us all about antibiotic resistance in our chickens. That was a great show Monday. Let's see, Tuesday, let me think what was Tuesday. I'm having a hard time remembering what Tuesday was. I'm losing my mind. Wednesday, we had Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Oh, yeah, Tuesday. Great show as well. We had two moms that came on the show to talk about the benefits of chickens for their children that had autism. So that was a great show, too. In fact, it was shared almost virally because of the people, because of the amount of children that have autism this day and age. And so it was a good educational show for the parents, and not just chickens, but other animals. We know animals have been used in therapy for a long time. Horses, dogs, cats, visiting nursing homes. They have camps in the summertime with animals for special needs kids. So really, therapy animals is nothing new. But as more and more pet chickens are prominent across the country, we're seeing chickens being used as therapy animals as well. And so we have two families that are battling their local municipalities to keep their chickens, other than just all the great benefits of that, but because their children, they've seen the great benefits of their children with autism and how it's helped them. So that was Tuesday's show. Wednesday, yesterday, Garden Wise, Living with Arlena. Today we have a great show. Tomorrow's Fun Friday. And a couple of things to look forward to there. We'll be giving away tons of prizes from our sponsors. You got to love that. Some type of trivia that we'll do tomorrow. I'll probably pick it in the morning or later tonight, what kind of trivia we'll have tomorrow, a themed chicken trivia day. But also tomorrow I'll be announcing all the rules, regulations, and how to enter the December Chicken Coop Contest, which is actually going to start on the 3rd. December the 3rd it will start, and then on Friday, December 21st, we'll be giving away that awesome chicken coop from mypetchicken.com to one lucky listener. It's valued at about $570 plus shipping. So it's well over a $600 value and shipped right to your front door. Some assembly acquired, but we'll be hearing that a lot as Christmas rolls around. So us parents know that, don't we? Some assembly acquired, and it takes all afternoon to put together. Gotta love it. And so we've got a great show tomorrow. We'll tell you how to win that awesome chicken coop, how to enter that contest, and you will not have to be listening live. We want to do that so everybody, Facebook, Twitter, live listeners, archive listeners, everybody will be able to win and enter without having to listen live the day of the show on the 21st. So we're definitely looking forward to that. Sound check. Lots of folks. Hey, well, Christmas Chick says we're sounding good here. And a little breakup there for a Critter Lover. It might be on your end or Dragonflyer. But let's do a sound check in the chat room here. I'm going to bring Pat live here in just a second. But don't think I didn't realize that I said the magic word just a few minutes ago when we were talking about the Christmas coop. Yep, the Christmas coop. Did we say the secret word? Okay, enough of that silly nonsense. Merry Christmas to all. Alrighty, it is now time, without further ado, of course, to welcome my wonderful co-host, partner in crime, the one, the only, author, and multi-talented, and of course, we all know her as the Compost Queen. It is, of course, Pat. Hey, Pat, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Whisper. Yeah, well, it's just but my day opened up, so it's always a treat to come on. How are you doing? It sounds like you're doing really well. Your voice is perky, and life must be good.
I'm really, really excited about the show today. That's probably why. Mm-hmm. We've got a chat room full of folks. We got all of our homeschoolers are listening and all of the feed and seed stores across the country that stream this radio show live to their customers. They're all just waiting to hear this awesome show today, as you may know. And we've got, Dr. Bridget McCray, poultry scientist, PhD. She's in the chat room as well. She wouldn't miss this for anything in the world either. And it's just going to be a really fabulous show. So thank you very much for joining us today. You're sounding good, clear, and crisp. So I'm going to leave you on. I'll leave you on live, and so when you can kind of chime in. But it is now time. I'm going to just go ahead and eliminate this next commercial break. We'll catch up here a little bit later in the show with those because I definitely want to bring in our special guest today. Right now, I'll bring him live on the radio, and I'll have him really introduce himself with all his credentials. But nonetheless, Dr. Bruce Charlton is here joining us. Doctor, thank you very much for joining us today.
Good. Can you hear me?
We can. Loud and clear. Thank you very much. Yep,
okay,
very good.
Okay, we're right next to a train track, so periodically a train will go by and I'll have to put you on mute.
No problem at all. We've got one down the street here, but that doesn't sound like it's quite as close to me as it is where you're at, so that's perfectly fine. We've got great sound coming in loud and clear. So first, thank you very much for coming on. I have to credit Dr. McCray for slipping me your name and information when I told her. I said, hey, look, I've been wanting to do a show like this for a long time, and maybe in the future I've got something to look forward to. We can find a way to either on Ustream or somehow broadcast a one live with video and audio. But for now, this is what we've got. This is what we're going to do. I think first of its kind, and where we have you walk us through all the steps of a necropsy. I've been putting out the kind of that line for our listeners to follow, and finally the show's kind of come to play. So thanks, Dr. McCray, for the tip and the recommendation, and thank you, Dr. Charlton, for coming on. Let's just first start and get the technical part out of the way, and if you'll tell us a little bit about your background and, of course, your credentials and really, I guess, your position right now that you do at UC Davis, and then we'll get started with the topic today.
Okay, I'm the branch chief of the California Animal Health and Food Safety Laboratory at Turlock, California.
Okay.
And we're a diagnostic lab run by UC Davis. And this particular lab is the only lab in the system that does only poultry.
Okay.
Primarily commercial broilers, layers, and turkey. But also we have a large squab operation just north of Turlock in Modesto. And we also get periodic commercial ducks. I've been here for 20 plus years and am a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Microbiology and the American College of Poultry Veterinarians.
I got a big laugh yesterday when we were going through all your credentials, and I believe you said something like, well, all that really means is I was in school for 30 years, which means I'm a slow learner.
That is correct.
That cracked me up. I haven't ever heard it put quite like that before. But that was great. I got definitely a kick out of that one. So perfect. But no, we always make sure that because people work so hard to get all those credentials. And so there's no way that we can ignore those. They mean so much. And it really is something I think to be proud of all those years of hard work, which truly makes us be able to say we bring on the experts on the show. So we thank you for joining us. Lots of folks have got the outline, and today we'll kind of simulate going through this necropsy. A lot of even as the backyard poultry and backyard chicken movement has just exploded over the last, we'll just say, decade. We even have a lot of soccer moms, for example, that have a flock of 12 that they may go outside and find a deceased bird, and a lot of them may not know what to do. They'll panic a little bit. Oh my gosh, this bird was fine yesterday, and all of a sudden, I just go outside, and now it's dead. On, you know, in the back of the run or the back of the coop, and I have no idea what's happening. And then all these questions: what should I do? Could it have been contagious, or do I need to do something with my other chickens? Do I need to vaccinate them? Do I need to separate them? Do I need to start medicating them? All this stuff, and a lot of times they're not really sure where to turn. Maybe local extension, but a lot of times in urban areas, there may not be an extension person that's educated up on poultry, or you just may not have a chicken vet within 100 miles of your house to know really what to do. And so, but on the other hand, I've heard from backyard pet chicken keepers that have and live maybe within an hour or two of a poultry lab, maybe a state poultry lab, and they've taken their birds to do the necropsy and have gotten the reports back on actually what the cause of death was. So it's kind of a wide range there, but I would say the majority of folks out there have in the backyard industry, pet chickens, have not had this done. They may have heard the term or kind of know what that is, but have never actually gone through that. Or even the folks that have had one done may
not have any idea the steps that are taken for the scientists to try to figure out exactly what the cause of death was, and all these signs that you can find out by, you know, opening up the chicken and taking a look. So that's why you're here today, because we want to learn about all of this and educate some folks on, hey, you know, it may not be a bad idea if you can have the opportunity to have this done, to get it done, because it may save, you know, hundreds if not thousands of birds, depending on if you're commercial or if you're, you know, even the pet chicken. Maybe you're a breeder and you can't, you know, obviously can't afford to lose your entire flock that you've worked years and years and years on. So that's why we're here today. So we'll just go ahead and get started. We'll kind of simulate where a soccer mom walks into the lab. Maybe she's called, made an appointment ahead of time. You know she's coming, and she has this. We'll keep it kind of plain and simple. A Rhode Island Red that she walked outside and one morning. No signs or symptoms. Yesterday when she was hanging out with her flock, everybody seemed to be okay. And then today she walks out, and she's this morning, and she's found it deceased. And she gathered it up, and she's headed over to the lab. And so she walks into the door and has this bird wrapped up in a towel. And she lays it down. And you've seen that many times?
That or a grocery bag. And you know, to start out, I would like to mention that, you know, periodically losing a backyard chicken is not unusual, but if you start experiencing in close proximity to each other numerous deaths in your flock, then you really should get some investigation professional investigation done. Frequently, you can take the dead bird, if it's really fresh, and wrap it in a plastic bag very tightly, squeezing all the air out, and then possibly put it in another bag and keep it in your refrigerator until you can possibly send it on ice packs to a diagnostic lab or deliver it to a diagnostic lab. There are some tests you can do on frozen carcasses, but freezing of the carcass destroys some ability to do a complete investigation. And you can send, you know, a dead bird in the mail on ice packs to, you know, to a diagnostic lab and get a good specimen for them to examine. And I would also like to say that if you have periodic loss of a chicken or a bird, that perform a necropsy or an autopsy. A necropsy is an autopsy on animals. Perform one yourself, especially if you're raising birds for meat and butchering. When you open those birds up, look at what normal tissue looks like so that it's easier to spot abnormal tissue.
That's a great idea. So if you're used to, again, processing your birds anyway, and you're used to processing them, then I guess you will kind of get, if you play close attention, what, you know, you may not know all the bad parts, if you will, to use layman terms, but hey, you'll see this on a regular basis enough to know what's at least a normal across the board for your chickens. So if you do open one up and you're looking and you see something different, it may catch your eye. Or when you do have one that dies and is sick and you open it up, then you'll say, you'll at least have that baseline to go by, because you've seen so many in the past that may be quote unquote normal. That's a great tip as well.
Yeah. The first thing to do is examining the external portion of the bird. You know, taking special note of the skin around the head and the body and the legs, looking for things like lice or mites, injuries, especially cannibalism, signs of molting, or any other abnormalities of the skin that you may see. And pay special attention to the around the eyes, the mouth, and the nares, because this could give you an indication of a respiratory type problem. If your birds, when they're alive, you hear a snicking sound or a gurgling sound, or they're shaking their heads, you know, this could indicate a respiratory problem. Now, chickens do pant, mouth breed in hot weather, but if they're doing that this time of year, there probably is something wrong in interfering with their breathing. Also, if you see dirty feathers, especially around their wings, it may indicate that they're wiping their nostrils for a respiratory disease.
Guess they can't get hankies, can they?
That's true.
Their little sleeves.
Okay. Once you've done your external evaluation, if you're dealing with a sick bird and you're going to euthanize it, there are only three methods that are approved by the American Veterinary Medical Association. Obviously, injection of barbiturates can only be performed by a veterinarian. But the two other methods that are approved is with CO2 gas. I don't know how available that is to people. Mm-hmm. But that is quite frequently used. We use that here at our lab. The third method, and probably the only one available to the homeowner or the backyard flock owner, is basically disarticulating the head from the neck.
Mm-hmm.
You can do this manually, but it does take practice. But probably the easiest method is with an axe.
Okay. Now, some people, again, I had posted this on Facebook advertising the show, and I put the outline up. And then, you know, every now and then someone who have their beloved, you know, chickens in the backyard, Gertrude and Ginger and Princess, they're like, oh, no, you know, they're like, you know, they would mention one of these ways. And so I followed up with being, you know, obviously, as you look at the list, necropsy is done on a deceased bird. And
yeah.
I said, obviously no one wants to put down a bird, but in a lot of cases, you know, if you have, you know, maybe it's 12 backyard chickens that you love dearly, and you've got this one that's severely sick, and you know, by doing this could save the rest of your flock, so you mourn one death of your pet chicken instead of all 12. But if it's, we'll say, in a commercial setting, you could save maybe thousands or hundreds of thousands of birds in a commercial setting by sacrificing, if you will, this one bird to find out what's wrong. Start, if needed, a medication program, a treatment program that would save the other 12 of your named pet chickens in your backyard. So nobody wants to just go in your backyard and, oh, we're just going to take this chicken and kill it, or cull it for this purpose. But in many cases, that's a sacrifice that will save the rest of your flock, or, and in, you know, thousands if it's a commercial flock. So just to make sure our listeners understand, we're not
advocating
this.
Yes, and you're absolutely right.
A necessary for science here to do this and have, you know, to save maybe the rest of your flock.
Yeah. Many of the...
I've got a question. Is the neck dislocation method suitable for the necropsies as well?
If you are planning on submitting it to a laboratory, you know, we always prefer to receive live birds, you know, if they're sick, because mm-hmm. we can collect a blood sample on them and do certain analyses right. from the blood. But if you're mailing the bird, disarticulating the head or removing the head and putting that in the plastic bag and shipping that also would be beneficial.
Okay. And what if you just then just dislocate the neck and kill it that way, just put the whole bag and the whole bird in the bag and
But that
won't affect any of the lab results.
No, it should not. And you know, one of the reports or one of the comments on a good laboratory report would say that there's evidence of cervical dislocation, or, you know, they shouldn't mm-hmm. mention that, yes, that was the cause of death, but, you know, everything else would be good for analysis.
Okay. There's a quick question in the chat room, Dr. Carlton. It's from Christmas Chick. We buy CO2 ball for paintball guns. Could you use that to put your chicken down? Not the paintball gun, but the CO2 from the cartridges.
You know, I suspect you can. What we have at the laboratory, we have a large trash can where we have a big cylinder of CO2 feeding into this can. I don't know if a paintball gun CO2 would have enough CO2 to euthanize or to cause the demise of the chick. But like a welding supply store or a gas store, we get ours from a gas supplier, so I don't know how readily available a large CO2 canister is. But that's a good question.
They're small.
Yeah.
Very, yeah.
Okay, when you're beginning to start the necropsy, it's very important to dip the bird into a bucket of detergent or preferably a Lysol solution. This wets the feathers, which prevents them from flying around, but it also sort of disinfects the external surface of the bird, and it makes performing the necropsy much easier.
And I'm looking here at the list, and I'm guessing before this time you hadn't mentioned it yet. As far as weighing the bird, I guess that happened pretty early on, getting a weight of the bird.
Some places do weigh the bird. You know, by your external examination, you know, there's such a variability of weights of the bird depending upon the age, the breed, you know, we do not do that routinely here, unless, you know, the complaint is lack of growth or unevenness of size, and then we may weigh the birds and compare it to a standard. But right. Your external evaluation of the carcass will let you know if, you know, by feeling
sure.
the breast muscle, you know, if it's nice and rounded breast, the bird is in good nutritional condition. Versus, you know, you can definitely see the keel bone or the mm-hmm. breast bone sticking out. You know, that gives you an indication that the bird, you know, was either sick for a long time or may have a tumor or just may not be getting enough to eat.
So just the physical examination, you lift this bird up and you're like, for a Rhode Island Red, this bird is
yeah.
light, it's thin, I can feel bones, the keel bone's sticking out, I don't have a lot of meat and muscle here. So just that observation during the physical examination would let you know without having to weigh it, hey, this definitely lighter than the standard Rhode Island Red should be, and just make that note, mental note. So, okay.
Yes, that's correct.
Great.
Okay, then, you know, also on the external examination, you know, certain respiratory diseases that give you an exudate coming out of either the eyes or under the eyelids or the nares, there are mycoplasma infections that are highly contagious. There's infectious coryza, which is caused by another bacteria that's highly contagious. Certain viral diseases, like infectious laryngotracheitis, and I'll give you some other lesions of that. But other viral diseases target the respiratory system. You should also look at the eyes. If you see cloudiness or roughness to the actual surface of the eye, that may be an indication of ammonia burns. Underneath the eye, and I'll get into that when we start actually cutting up the bird, but underneath the eye is a sinus or a pouch. It's called the infraorbital sinus. Sometimes these can be swollen, especially in turkeys. They can get huge, and they can be filled with kind of a mucus-type material that can indicate either parasites like cryptosporidia or bacterial infections. Look at the wattles. There is a disease called chronic fowl cholera, that you can get huge swelling of the wattles and the comb. Also look around the eyelids, little crust or kind of like scabs around the eyelids and areas of the skin that doesn't have feathers. Maybe an indication of pox, especially at this time of year. If the skin is kind of scabby, crusty, and flakes easy, especially around the eyes and the mouth, this may indicate a vitamin deficiency. And that should pretty much cover the external evaluation, and I've mentioned moistening the birds.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think if you're ready, we can start with our cutting open the bird.
That's fine, sure. Now, how about, you're obviously going to, when we start cutting open the bird, you're looking at digestive tract and things. Is there anything to look externally around the vent area other than, say, the mites and lice in that area when you're examining? Because we always talk about the importance of being a poop inspector throughout the life of your chicken. But is there anything specifically around the vent area? That always seems to be so many signs. Hey, look at here, look at the poop, or is there drainage? Is there, you can see where it's been draining because the feathers are stained, or anything specific around the vent area we look for before we start entering the bird?
You mentioned the mites. That's a prime location for mites. But just soiling of the vent, the feathers around the vent, may be an indication of diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's advisable to take a look at the poop and where it's coming from. As far as materials that you need, a real heavy pair of scissors is probably the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can get fairly inexpensive. Also, a knife is kind of handy.
Mm-hmm.
And
very sharp, I'm sure.
Yes.
The sharper the better.
The scalpel,
I guess, yeah. I was going to say, yeah, if you don't have access to a scalpel, or a lot of people have X-Acto knives, which I guess would be a home craft scalpel.
Yeah.
But the X-Acto knives, I guess if you bought one of those for a few bucks, would be about as ideal as you could get for something like this.
Yeah. When I perform necropsies, my three tools that I always use are a heavy pair of scissors, just a regular butcher knife, and a pair of forceps or tweezers.
Mm-hmm.
I use scalpels on very young birds, but very rarely do I use a scalpel. None of our patients recover. It's a one-way street, so we don't we're not surgeons, we're pathologists.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Doctor, there's one more question there about the flakiness around the eyes indicating maybe a vitamin deficiency. What kind of deficiency might that be, and could you then go back and see that, check on the other chickens in the flock, since they've got that same symptom?
Yeah, usually that could indicate a possibility of a vitamin B deficiency.
Vitamin D as in dog, or
B as in boy.
Boy, okay.
Yeah, that's probably the most common one.
Okay, thank you.
And, you know, today with commercial feeds, and you know, we rarely see vitamin deficiency unless there is a mix-up at the feed store. They forgot to put in the vitamin
mm-hmm.
pack.
We said that.
That always is a possibility. And the other thing is, if you store feed for a period of time, sometimes the feed can go bad, and rancidity of the fats in the feed can interfere with the vitamins.
Mm-hmm. Which is a good reason not to buy expired feed or discounted feed, because it's
probably
older. Yeah.
Or you know, I know it's a good deal to buy in large quantities, but be aware that you need to use the feed up, you know, in a short period of time.
And to elaborate that on as well, again, not bashing anybody, but I often see, and more recently as time goes on, people starting to maybe mix their own feed, which is, you know, I'm not saying, hey, go out, you know, if you want to grow your own feed. Pat did a great thing there up at the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy about, you know, feed doesn't necessarily have to come from a bag. It was awesome. But, you know, I see a lot on meetup groups and forums and things where, hey, I've got a buddy down the road. He's mixing up all this feed and you know, hey, it's going to be great. And it's it looks so good. It smells so good. And it looks almost like granola and all, but you know, make sure you look at that tag, if there's even a tag, look at the percentages, if it's got the vitamins in it, the ingredients, what amount of protein it is, if you're doing that, because I've seen a lot of folks that now have gotten into, you know, maybe mixing, or, you know, I order the corn, I order some soybean, I order some of this, I order some that, mix it all together, and I've got some food a lot cheaper than buying it in a 50-pound bag. But then just kind of word to the wise, just be careful if you're doing that, or use due diligence.
Yes, I agree. You know, veterinarians like to blame nutritionists because nutritionists like to blame veterinarians. But I admire nutritionists because it's an area I didn't do very well in school.
Very good. All righty, we'll continue. Great information so far. Great.
Okay. The first thing you're going to do is lay the bird, the bird that you had dipped in detergent or Lysol solution, you know, lay it on its back with its neck and head pointing towards you. And then we're going to take these heavy scissors and go into the beak. It's called the commissure. It's the junction of the lower and upper beak. Cut through that, and you should be able to point the tip of your scissors, one tip of your scissors, down the esophagus and gently cut as you slide the scissors down. And if you're good, you can go all the way down the esophagus into the crop, and you're cutting through the skin of the neck and the wall of the esophagus, and you can go all the way down into the crop. And if your tip of your scissors falls out of the esophagus and you're just going down the skin of the neck. You go all the way to the breast, and then you can come back, and the esophagus is real easy to see, and you can continue cutting there until you enter the crop. There you should note, you know, what the esophagus and the crop, the internal surface looks like. There are such things as capillaria worms that cause, it should be a very silky, smooth, moist, homogeneous appearance. But if you see, like, cottage cheese-type plaques on the surface of the esophagus or crop, that may indicate things like capillaria, a yeast infection like candidiasis. There's another parasite, trichomonads. Or even a vitamin A deficiency will cause roughening of that mucosa or internal lining. There's also a form of pox called wet pox that can affect the esophagus and more frequently in the oral cavity or around the tongue and on the roof of the mouth, on the choanal slit. That's at the top of the mouth. That form of wet pox can be very deadly to birds and is easily transmissible to other birds.
Okay.
The next thing that I do is I take my heavy scissors and I cut across the upper beak between the eyes and the nares. And just chop off the end of the beak. And then you can look at the head side of the beak and see the inside the nasal turbinates. These are kind of like a scrolling structure inside the nares that is involved in respiration, and they should be nice and pink or reddish color, but frequently they may have a pus-like exudate that comes out of it. Also, if you hit this right, you'll cut an opening into the infraorbital sinuses. That's the pouch underneath the eyes, and if there's any type of exudate in that sinus, it will kind of flow out. It could be mucousy, it could be just very watery, or there may be like a cheese curd stuck in there and nothing flowing out. That can indicate a bacterial infection, or I mentioned Cryptosporidia is a parasite that can be there. But that's a primary site for Mycoplasma calicepticum or Mycoplasma synoviae infections to occur.
Okay. I'm following along here on the outline myself.
Okay. Okay.
Going down step by step.
So we've got to pretty much the upper portion of the bird examined. We've looked at the esophagus and the crop and the larynx and the trachea. Oh, I haven't mentioned the trachea. That's the other pipe that goes down the neck. Now, when we opened up the bird, we went down the esophagus. The trachea is the other tube. That's the windpipe. Take a look at the opening of the windpipe or trachea, that's the larynx. And it's a very prominent structure. But that should be a nice pink type color. If you see blood on the epiglottis or larynx, and if you cut down through the larynx into the trachea. If you see blood in the trachea, that could be due to some very important diseases, infectious laryngotracheitis, which we have here in the United States. But it could also be due to lesions of exotic Newcastle disease, which we do not have in the United States. And if you see either of those, if you see blood in the trachea, especially if you have a significant death loss of your birds, I would take it to any veterinarian as quickly as possible, because even small animal veterinarians are trained in foreign animal diseases, and it's vitally important to the whole United States that these be recognized and diagnosed quickly before they have a severe economic impact for the whole country. So let's see,
let me stop you're talking about, because before we head down, and you talked about the contents of the crop, and you always hear, you know, doctors and nurses, you know, that work in ERs, oh, the funniest thing I ever saw, or this is the weirdest thing, or in all of your years of experience, maybe not the funniest thing, but the most unique thing you found in a chicken crop. I mean, an entire small mouse. You know, bits of styrofoam that never got digested, or a Hot Wheel car. I mean, just a complete garter snake, because people always say, oh my gosh, my chickens gobbled that whole mouse down, or gobbled that whole snake, or they eat styrofoam off the coop insulation, or that. Does anything ring a bell that you just, when you opened up the crop, said, well, that's not a great sign there, or hey, that's a first for the lab?
Well, usually not in the crop. I mean, okay. We just had a backyard flock earlier this week. I think it was on Tuesday. Dr. Centius posted the backyard bird. And a nail, which is not uncommon, that they'll go through the crop and through the true stomach, the proventriculus, and they'll get lodged in the gizzard. And then when the gizzard tries to contract and grind things up, the nail will actually pierce the muscle, and it will be either embedded into the muscle, if it's a small nail, or this particular one that he had on Tuesday also went through the gizzard and into the liver and caused a massive lesion in the liver. And I had never seen that before.
A nail. Someone in the chat room just commented that they found two menthol cigarette butts in the crop. Apparently she said someone may have threw them over the fence and their chicken ate them, the cigarette butts. So just as people in the chat room are pointing out or sharing their things that they found before and when they did opened up a chicken.
Yeah, it's amazing. Most of the stuff passes rather quickly into the gizzards, into the thing, and doesn't really stay in the crop very long. But, you know, the contents of the crop are very important, especially if you do have diarrhea and some sort of digestive problem. It gives you an indication, is the bird eating? If the contents of the crop are extremely firm and hard, maybe the bird didn't have access to water and it's formed a ball in there and can't really get down into the gizzard. Or the other one is if it's very sour, smelly type contents, it may stay too long in the crop and not be emptying, and that may be an indication of some abnormality.
Okay. Thanks for sharing.
Okay. Okay, I think we've pretty much covered the upper portion of the bird. Now, what I like to do is rotate the bird 180 degrees, so I'm looking at the vent. Usually I make a soft incision into the skin between the leg and the breast on both sides. And I extend that incision in the skin up the side of the breast on both sides. And then I incise the skin between these two cuts at the lower portion, or at the abdominal cavity, so that I can grab the skin and the legs and kind of pull the skin towards the head and expose the entire breast muscle. Did I make that clear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That gets all the feathers out of the way. And then I take both hands, one on each leg, and disarticulate the hip joint. This just allows the bird to lay very flat and makes the rest of the necropsy a little bit easier. But as I'm pulling that skin up, I'm looking at the subcutaneous tissue, or the tissue between the skin and the muscle. And if you see kind of a port red wine color, lots of fluid and bubbly gas material in that tissue underneath the skin, that may be an indication of gangrenous dermatitis.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be due to a variety of bacterial organism. Another one sometimes you see underneath the skin is kind of a yellow, firm, we call it a plaque, but it's basically pus that has really dried out, and that may be indication of an E. coli infection. And that could be due to scratches on the skin, if the birds are overcrowded or they don't have enough feed space, they're jumping over each other, and if they scratch the skin, bacteria can get in there and cause these type of lesions. Okay, so now we have the bird with the skin reflected off the breast. The legs are disarticulated and they're laying perpendicular to the breast. Then we take our scissors and we very carefully cut into the abdominal cavity, at the very end of the breast, and we try to be very careful and not nick the intestines. This is where I use a forceps. I kind of tent up the skin, pulling it away from the internal organs and just nick it, and then I can carefully put the point of the scissors into the nick that I have and kind of pull it to the side away from, and pull the skin away from the intestines. And then I extend that cut up through the bones alongside the breast on both sides of the bird, about halfway between, it's in the middle of the ribs, it's halfway between the back of the bird and the keel bone or the breastbone. And if I extend that all the way up, there are two bones, the clavicle and the coracoid, or the wishbone and the coracoid bones. They're kind of hard, but if you clip those off, you can basically take the breast right off the top of the, or off the top, and okay. you're exposing all the internal organs. Now, the first thing that you're going to see, and I'm going to describe this, you know, from the neck side of the neck end of the bird towards the vent. The first thing you're going to see is the heart. It's kind of in a depression, and right around it is the liver. Now, the heart should have a sac around it, the pericardial sac. It should be barely discernible. You can barely see it. And if you have forceps or tweezers, you can kind of pull it up, and it should be kind of a clear sac around the heart. Then there's going to be the liver. Further towards the vent, you'll see the surface of the gizzard. It will be on your right, the bird's left side. And then there'll be intestines, and then you should be close to the vent by then. Now, what I like to do is gently pick up the gizzard, and the bird has what's called air sacs. They're very clear, transparent membranes surrounding the internal organs, and they're critical in the respiration of the bird, the breathing of the bird. And they should be very thin and clear, and you can see through them. With certain respiratory diseases, they can get cloudy, or they can get completely covered with a very caseous or cheesy-like exudate. Things like E. coli and mycoplasmas and a whole variety of diseases. But I grab that gizzard and gently pull it away from the air sacs, and I pull it over to my left, the bird's right, and by reflecting all that, most of the intestines will go over there with it. And you should be able to see deeper into the cavity of the bird.
I had mentioned in the chat room, as you're describing all this, I had posted in there, I said, I wonder, because Dr. McRae talked about also using the big heavy scissors to cut through, again, the breastbones and the ribs and things like that. And I thought, I had posted, I wonder if you could use an electric Dremel tool with a rotating blade, just to kind of make that quicker and simpler. But, of course, she puts that... that would be quite messy, and you'd probably sling a lot of bacteria around. Sling a lot of bacteria around the place and on you and everywhere else in the room. And then my response was, I guess I watched too many Quincy episodes as a kid. So that was frowned upon in the chat room, using a Dremel tool. And then, of course, I put, well, you know us guys and our power tools.
Yeah.
It's like we have a 6-foot garden. We have a little 6-foot flower bed, and we have this big industrial tiller that we pull.
That's right.
Yeah, but those little Dremels are so much fun. I mean, you can even do your nails with them, you know. It's not just the guys that like the little power tools. But tillers, now really, Whisper, you know, tillers, we talked about that.
Yes, we did. Tillers are bad for the soil. Yes, bad. But so for our listeners who didn't have advantage of the chat room, and you might have been thinking out there, hey, what about a Dremel tool? Not recommended. All righty, moving right along.
Okay. Let's see.
You know what? Actually, it's a little past one, and we didn't take the break before we brought you on. So we'll...
Okay.
Well, be a good time for a commercial break. We can regroup, get find ourselves back on the outline for the rest of the show and where we're at. So, folks, hopefully you're tuning in and hopefully you're enjoying the show today. We've got Dr. Bruce Charlton, and he is walking us through in detail, step by steps, of a necropsy. Fascinating information, lots of activity in the chat room with questions and comments, and it's just a wonderful show. Glad you could tune in, and we'll be back after this short break from our sponsors. No matter how much we pamper our chickens, no matter how often we clean our coops, there is always that chance they will get mites and lice. If they do, you want to treat them as naturally as possible. Poultry Protector from Carefree Enzymes uses all-natural enzymes to eliminate the mites and lice from your coop, nesting boxes, and chickens with no egg withdrawal period. My chickens don't always have mites and lice, but when they do, I prefer Poultry Protector from CarefreeEnzymes.com. Happy flocking, my friends.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Snap Lock Chicken Coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on this very special show, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Pat, you are now back live. Dr. Charlton, you're back live as well. Pat, before we get back started, any questions, notes, or questions you wrote down up to this point for Doc?
Yes. Well, I was wondering, as going through the details, are there any YouTubes on this? If one had it right in front of them, they could just go to YouTube University and they'll... Okay, now foot here and use your forceps there.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll go ahead, Doc.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure if there is or not.
We have talked about that earlier. In fact, Walter said it would be even a better show if it was on video. And I know Doc's out in California. I'm here in Georgia. Couldn't be further apart, I don't think, anywhere in the country. But that is definitely something we're striving for, and it gives me something to look forward to. Maybe one day we can actually, because we do have video capabilities, as our regular listeners know, for the show, but we all have to be together to do that. So maybe when we get the Chicken Whisperer Mobile out to California, then we can schedule a schedule to do that and have video of it where we can also record it for everybody else to see as well. So that's a great question, Pat, and something that we now have a goal in the future to do.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at this poster as you're going along here, Doctor, about from the Guide to Poultry Anatomy and Diseases, and that's been actually quite useful. I mean, once you get over the initial shock of seeing all the guts everywhere, but it does go into hit quite a bit of the things that you're talking about and has pictures of it. So that's from Peter Brown sells those, the Guide to Poultry Anatomy and Diseases. It's pretty well done compared to what you're telling us to look at.
Okay, well, good. I think we have that poster up in our necropsy room so that for our students and ourselves when we keep us on track.
So even the experts have a cheat sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's wearing the body. I showed this to our poultry and garden club, and they just about all left. They were not impressed, but maybe as they get more used to poultry diseases. Anyway, but thank you, Whisper. That's the only comment I had. This is really fabulous.
Awesome. Okay, we'll continue.
Okay, so before the break, we had basically removed the breast and exposed all the internal organs, and we reflected the gizzard from our right to our left, or the bird's left and to the bird's right. You know, a couple things that you need to be aware of. Now, starting with the heart, if there's a lot of fluid around the heart, and sometimes there can be fluid completely in the abdominal cavity. When you make that first incision into the abdominal cavity, when you're trying to reflect the breast away from the bird, if a yellow straw-colored fluid comes out and there's fluid around the heart, this is an indication of ascites.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a fairly common condition in especially broilers that are growing real rapidly. If they grow, you know, too rapidly, their heart cannot keep up with their increased body mass. There are also defects. Turkeys have a syndrome called round heart disease, where the heart is just inefficient at pumping blood, and so you get the development of the ascites. Or this fluid. Also, there can be certain liver problems that can cause this fluid accumulation in the abdominal cavity. So that's one of the things to look at when you look at the heart. Another condition is called visceral gout. There you can see white chalky plaques on the surface of the heart, sometimes on the surface of the liver, sometimes in the joints, I'll get to later. But this is usually is an indication of a renal kidney problem, and it's called visceral gout when it's on all the visceral organs. When you reflected the gizzard, from the heart, and I mentioned the liver and the heart as far as visceral gout, but a real common condition is E. coli infection, and there you can have the heart sac be really cloudy with kind of a fibrin or yellowish type material on the surface of the heart sac, on the surface of the liver, and also on the air sacs. This is an indication of the possibility of an E. coli infection. If you're looking at a layer, you can see a bunch of, you may see yolk material in the abdominal cavity. This is frequently a egg peritonitis, or it can be secondary to some other bacterial infections. Also on the liver, you could see actual tumors growing. They'll be kind of a focal or a solitary area of kind of a whitish, grayish mass that's embedded in the liver. The liver should be kind of a brownish, red, tan color. But these tumors will stand out, and this could be due to Merrick's disease or lymphoid leukosis or a variety of other tumors. If you see a whole bunch of really small nodules or pea-sized tumors throughout the abdominal cavity attached to the intestine, to the air sac, to the ovaries, this could be a carcinoma or another type of tumor that has metastasized. Usually these start from either the pancreas or the oviduct and spread throughout the abdominal cavity. That pretty much covers the main things in the liver and the heart. There is a...
Doc, there's a question in the chat room about the gout. Is there a particular feed that one would give chickens that would cause that high uric acid level in those crystals to form?
It has been associated with excess protein.
And what would be considered excess protein, kind of percentage-wise?
Ooh, now you're getting into nutrition.
I'm into nutrition. I mean, is it 26% or 40% or too many mealworms, you know?
I would go with a recommended, a starting ration, depending on the age of the birds, then a growing ration for pullets, and then the laying ration when they start egg production. Dr. McCray can answer that question better.
Maybe she can comment in the chat room. This is totally unrelated to the necropsy, but I just got a message from a listener sent to me that says, CW, the doctor that is on right now telling about the necropsy, he sounds like Sam Elliott.
Uh-oh.
So if I guess if ever anybody wanted to do a voiceover and couldn't afford, hey Sam, come then we've got a maybe there's a second career for you there, Doc.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'll have to pay attention to what Sam Elliott sounds like now.
Oh my goodness. Maybe we can get an answer from Dr. McCray in the chat room about that question, Pat.
Okay.
All righty, continuing on.
Okay. The one other thing that I want to mention on the liver is kind of it's a very interesting disease called histaminiasis, it's fairly common. Well, it can be occur in turkeys and pheasants and peacocks, but it can also occur in chickens. And this is a very interesting parasite. It's a flagellated parasite it comes from the cecal worm, which is another roundworm parasite, which birds pick up from eating, pheasants pick it up from eating infected earthworms. So it goes from eating earthworms to this roundworm in the ceca that then has this flagellated parasite in the cecal worm that then goes into the liver and can cause these huge round lesions that can be yellow and green in color. And unfortunately, there is no medication allowed to be utilized for this condition, and it's called histaminiasis. But you can get very dramatic lesions, primarily in turkeys, but also you should be cautious about raising chickens and turkeys and peacocks all in the same premise. That's just something to be aware of. We reflected the gizzard, coming out of the gizzard, the first part of the intestine is the duodenum, and that forms a loop. And in between that loop is the pancreas. But then following that intestinal loop down, then you are in the rest of the small intestine. And then you come to, towards the vent area, you come to the two large cecas. And then the rectum and the cloaca. You should make an incision way in the proventriculus, that's above the gizzard, and continue to cut through the gizzard and then through the entire intestinal tract. And there should be feed material there. Mm-hmm. You should have grit or small stones in the gizzard. If the bird has been off of feed for a period of time, the lining of the gizzard and sometimes up in the proventriculus or the true part of the stomach ahead of the gizzard, the inside will be stained kind of a green. Due to the bile duct or the bile gland or the gallbladder. I'm sorry. When a bird is off feed, the gallbladder gets very large. It's attached to the liver and it becomes very prominent. And the bile is secreted into into the gizzard. It's actually secreted into the duodenum, but it goes up into the gizzard and sometimes the proventriculus. But that's a good way to tell if a bird has been off a feed. Now, the inside surface of the intestine has a variety of appearances, but if you start seeing white specks or spots or blood spots, or it starts to form almost a Turkish towel type appearance, that can be an indication of severe problems, either due to coccidia, which is very common, or necrotic enteritis. Which is a bacterial infection that comes on top of coccidia. And it's important to determine exactly what you have because the medication for coccidia and necrotic enteritis is completely different. Sometimes they're used in conjunction with each other. But if you don't treat both conditions, then your mortality or death loss is going to continue. Also, when you're looking at the intestines and more pulling them away, I mentioned the air sacs, the thin, transparent membrane. Fungal infections like Aspergillus, you can see basically it looks like your bread mold, green spots on the air sacs, and that is usually due to Aspergillus, but it can be due to a variety of other fungal agents. That's not too common, but it indicates some chronic condition where the bird has been sick for a long period of time.
Okay.
Let's see. Now, when you removed the intestinal tract or pushed it to a side, at the bottom of the bird, along the back, you will see either the testicles, if it's a rooster,
mm-hmm.
Or the ovaries, if it's a female. Now, the female hen, they start out with a right and left oviduct, but normally the right oviduct regresses and they only have one. That is the act of, well, if you see a bunch of yellow oak material, that's an active ovary. And if the bird is out of production, they'll shrink down and just be very little tiny marble or small pea size, kind of reddish color if it's inactive. But if it's in production, they'll be bright yellow, like a good normal yolk. Now, sometimes you should open up the oviduct because sometimes there can be what's a condition called salpingitis. This is an infected oviduct, and these can get huge. I mean, bigger than a softball. And usually they're really hard. And if you cut open that mass of exudate, frequently it will be laminated or have an onion-like appearance, layers of exudate. And like I said, it can get huge. And it can have a variety of shape of just being a round mass to kind of being elongated and following the tract of the oviduct. But a hen can have this condition and looks like it's well fed because it's got a huge abdomen. But if you frequently, the muscle, the breast muscle will be very thin, and it's just they can live for a long time with this condition. And you know, it's not serious enough to cause the death of the bird, although it can, but they can live a long time. Sometimes the right oviduct does not completely regress or go away, but it can be semi-functional in that it can be filled with a fluid. This is called the cystic, a persistent cystic right oviduct. And that is not uncommon, but it's always a non-functional oviduct. Let's see.
I have to share with you. I have to share with you this comment in the chat room.
Okay.
Pamela, a longtime listener, put in there. Lucky me! It doesn't seem that the chicken in my freezer has any of these parts.
That is lucky.
That is very lucky. Yeah. Yeah.
I see what one of the chat rooms is a drinking ginger ale because it tends to settle the stomach, you know.
Oh,
well, the next thing I'm going to describe, Pamela, you will have in your thing, and that is the kidneys.
Okay.
They're underneath the oviduct, and they're actually embedded in the backbone of the back of the kidney, and they're a paired structure. There's a right and left, and they have different ovulate or lobules on them. And personally, when I have a roasted chicken, I really like the kidneys to eat, but I know some people don't. But
hey. You know, what tastes like chicken, right?
Tastes like chicken, yes.
Oh, me.
But the kidneys are important to look at because on the surface of the kidneys, the internal, looking down on them from the opened up bird, if you see a white line contained in a tubule, that's urate or urine from the kidney. And you'll see that when the birds are dehydrated or have lack of water. That's one time you'll see it. Another time you'll see it is a condition in layers called urolithiasis. And this is actual uric acid crystals form in the ureters. And block up the flow of urine down there. And this can lead to gout type of condition, or can cause complete stopping of normal kidney function. You know, it's probably most frequently seen in layers, in commercial layers, if as pullets, if they're not fed, a correct nutrition as far as calcium, phosphorus, vitamin D levels, and then move to a layer ration, this can predispose the birds to urolithiasis, is the condition it's called. And let's see. The last organ that I want to go through on the internal is... Mm-hmm. Directly, and remember, the bird is on its back, and the vent is looking at us, but directly under the intestinal connection to the vent, in young birds, is an organ called the bursa of Fabricius. This is where their B cells, or immune cells called the B cells, come from. It's a structure that is unique to birds. Humans and mammals don't have it. We get our B cells from the bone marrow, but the B cells of chickens come from the bursa. And there is a disease, a viral disease, that attacks those B cells in that organ. And normally that organ will go away when the bird reaches maturity. But it's very important organ because it's involved in the immune response and the overall health of the birds. So in young birds, if you should ever see it's kind of a pale tan color,
But if it ever should be a reddish color or very swollen and wet-looking, yellow and wet-looking, or red hemorrhage, it may indicate an infectious bursal disease infection. So that, you know, that is an organ that's often overlooked and is very important. The last thing that you should do is examine the joints. And this is where the knife comes in handy. And it's cutting across the joints and looking. You should probably not see any fluid. There may be just a little bit of clear yellow fluid in the joints. But if you start seeing a whole lot of fluid or fluid with cheesy curds in it or other type of exudate, sometimes blood, that indicates a joint problem. And there are certain diseases that can affect the joints and are highly transmissible. Others, it could just be an indication of poor conformation, and so stresses on that joint may interfere with normal function. And sometimes there's a form of gout that can give you a white chalky appearance to that, and that's called articular gout. And frequently it will have these urate deposits in the joint and also the joints of the actual foot. And sometimes you can even see these externally with just white nodules wherever there's a joint on their foot. Just other things that I forgot to mention, the color of the liver. I've mentioned if there's a film or a fibrin over the surface of it, if the liver is very yellow, it may be an indication that it's a fatty liver or you're feeding too high of a caloric condition. We see this very frequently in backyard flocks because people love their chickens and love to feed them excessively. And are like myself, when you open up the abdominal cavity, if you have a fat pad or a layer of fat that's probably greater than a half an inch, the birds are too fat and you can have problems. And frequently going along with that is a fatty liver. And this makes the liver extremely friable or fragile. And if the bird jumps down from a perch or gets bumps into a fence because the dog is chasing it or something like that, frequently those livers will fracture and the bird will bleed to death internally. Merrick's disease, I did mention that sometimes you will see tumors in the liver. And it's kind of a grayish, whitish mass. You can also see these masses in the lung. You can see them in the spleen. You can see them in the lining of the intestine. There is, if you scrape away the kidney, there is what's called the sciatic plexus. It's a nerve there, and if you dissect some of the muscles away from the legs, you'll run across the sciatic nerve. There's one on each leg And frequently with Merrick's, one nerve will be greatly enlarged over the other nerve. And that's a good indication that you have Merrick's. Frequently, they look the same, and you have to have tissues looked at under a microscope to make that diagnosis. I don't know. I think we've gone through the outline.
Mm-hmm. And one question I've been waiting to ask,
because
it's been about an hour and 40 minutes since we started the show, maybe say an hour 30 before you brought you on. But I know you're describing this in detail, but as many as you've done in the past, from the time you take possession of the bird, or let's just say pull it out of the refrigerator, when you actually start this process, how long does one take? I guess they're all a little different based on findings, but on average, you can complete one of these in about how many minutes?
That's a good question. And here at the lab, because we have a nice table.
Mm-hmm. All the right tools.
And all the right tubes, and have a necropsy assistant. Our commercial folks can submit up to 8 birds at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, in an hour we can go through 8 birds. A single backyard bird, it probably takes us a good half hour to open it up. Maybe a little bit less, 15 minutes to open it up. But, I've done numerous of these, so I can do it pretty quickly. And then in the laboratory, at various stages, like as soon as we remove the breast, we stop the actual procedure and take bacterial cultures of the liver, or of the trachea, or of the air sacs before we start mucking around and getting everything dirty. So the whole procedure, can take an hour, hour and a half.
Okay. Have you ever, just thinking this process, have had a case where, again, I guess a lot of them may be time is of the essence, and you may quarter of the way through, halfway through, find something that is significant, and then make that call and say, hey, we know we've got this, I'm not done yet, you need to start this path of treatment for your birds, and then maybe finished up once you found something significant that may save the other flock or the other, whether it be 6 birds or 6,000.
Yeah. Yes, that occurs quite frequently. Normally, by the time, say, somebody submits a backyard bird to us, before they get a final report, we do the gross necropsy, and then we do bacteriology and virology and histology, looking at tissues under the slide, checking for viruses, checking for like avian influenza. That whole testing process can take anywhere from usually around 2 weeks, anywhere along that line. And usually it's, the next morning when we look at the bacteriology plates. If we see something very significant, we will call the owner and let them know.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, they most likely have other birds that are at risk, and they can frequently do something and protect those other birds. A good example is coccidiosis. When we open the intestines and we take a scraping of the intestinal lining and just look at it under a microscope in the necropsy room, if we see, evidence of coccidiosis, we will call the owner or the producer or the backyard mm-hmm. block owner right away because, mm-hmm. If you get the birds on a coccidiostat, you know, within 24, 48 hours, 72 at the most, you will have a notice improvement in your flock. That's one disease that it's very important, and the necrotic enteritis is another one that you can lose, you know, a good portion of your flock if you don't get them on medication right away.
Okay.
Other condition is usually, you know, looking, we have exceptional bacteriologists that, like for foul cholera, within the next morning they'll come and grab us in the hallway and said, you know, such and such a case has foul cholera.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a disease that will kill hundreds of turkeys in a matter of days.
Mm-hmm.
Can be very easily prevented by putting them on the appropriate treatment.
Okay. There was a question in the chat room. We opened it up, and one question someone had was, how do you dispose of the carcass afterwards? And, of course, my co-host Pat Foreman said a little Italian dressing marinade at 350 degrees.
Well, we put them in a biohazard container and then incinerate them. So it's a little bit higher than 375 degrees. I think it's closer to 2,000 degrees.
Kind of like medical the hospital. Yeah, red bag in the red bag container, and then the company comes and then takes it back to their incinerator. Sure.
Yeah. Now they've been investigating, and a lot of university extension agents have been investigating composting, and have had good luck with composting of chickens if you do it correctly. Pardon?
Yes, yeah, if done correctly, compost is always And it can, the bacteria do amazing things to whatever might be wrong with that carcass and breaking it down.
Yes, you know, and if your compost is done correctly, it should get to a high enough temperature where it will kill, you know, all the pathogens of poultry. They're even looking at, you know, in the case of avian influenza, where they have to depopulate, you know, a large commercial operation, composting right in the house to prevent the spread of that virus around. So, you know, composting is a very viable alternative if it's done correctly.
A couple of more questions I'll go ahead and ask, so
okay.
I don't forget them because the chat room scrolls very quickly. If someone, say, lives in your area and they've got a dozen backyard birds and they have this scenario where they go outside and one has deceased, and do they need to call and make an appointment? If they drop in and drop the bird off, is there a charge or a cost involved with that?
That's a very good question. And in California, the California Department of Agriculture allows free diagnostics of backyard flocks. It is the state's method of disease surveillance for the protection of the commercial industry. Now, I don't know if other states offer that, but backyard flock birds can be submitted to any of our, there's four labs in California, and can be submitted to any of these four labs for diagnostic services.
That's great. Very good. And a question here. Where did you obtain your degrees? Let me scroll back up. Like I said, it moves fast. Where did you obtain your degrees? Why did you choose this career? And do you have a 4-H background?
Yes. I'm originally from Nebraska and was 10 years in 4-H. And 1 year I won reserve champion in baby beef. That was
all right.
One of my highlights. But I got my bachelor's at the University of Maryland in College Park. I got my master's in DVM at Colorado State University in Fort Collins.
Mm-hmm.
I got my PhD at UC Davis. And I'm looking for a postdoc in Hawaii now.
In Hawaii?
Yeah, I keep on moving west.
Yeah, Maryland, Colorado, California. Yeah, keep moving out that way. Yeah, get that out in Hawaii. And what a great, wonderful place to return.
Yeah.
and enjoy the weather. So Dr. McRae says, yay. So, oh my goodness. That is awesome. Great. Poet's wife in the chat room says, you're going to get your postdoc in beach studies.
That's right.
Little beach chicks. Little chicks out there in those bikinis. You know how that is.
We do have some clients that submit to our lab from Hawaii, and they're very kind in frequently giving us macadamia nuts.
Ooh, I love those.
They're
almost as good as pecans.
From California, it's almonds.
Almonds. I just had a handful of almonds, too. Yeah.
I can see it now. The study will be the effects of beach sand on baby chicks in terms of grit use in their digestive. I can see how this is all going to pan together and be perfect for you. So, hey, Doc, thank you so much for joining us today. What an awesome show. I was saying, folks, everybody in the chat, you have lots of fans now. They were posting earlier on at the commercial break. They were like, oh, man, this guy rocks, and this what a super show. And I was like, this is one of the top five over 75 episodes, something like that. This has to rank in the top five. So from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you very much for coming on. Thanks, Dr. McRae, for definitely recommending you. And like I told you on the phone yesterday, when you were being recommended, the term world renown came up several times. So,
well, I wouldn't believe any of that stuff.
Go ahead and accept it. It's okay. With all that education, I'm sure you're world renowned.
In fact, we've got fans in the chat room are going, does he have a Facebook page? Does he have a Facebook page? Does he have a Twitter account? Can we follow him?
No, I'm still using a flip phone.
Got you, love it. Got to love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah, Doc says, Dr. McRae says, you're too busy for Facebook, saving all these birds and helping. But thank you so much. I'm sure I'll be in touch in the future, and maybe, just maybe, we won't hold you to it. But if I can ever get the Chicken Whisperer Mobile out to California and head up the West Coast, everybody's begging for me to come out that way. Maybe we can stop by. Maybe we can do one of these either broadcast live or and combination tape it so we can have one that we can all these folks can refer to if they want to try to do it at themselves at the house. They'll have all this information they can use. So thank you so much for coming on, and we hope you have a great rest of your week and weekend.
All righty. Thank you very much, Andy and Pat. It's been a pleasure. There's a lot of information on the USDA site. That's one of your sponsors. And people should really look at that.
That sounds great. Thank you very much for coming on, and we'll look forward to having you back on maybe again in the future. So thank you so much. Pat, what an awesome show.
Really? Oh, I know. I took notes, and I've been looking at this poster and following along and thinking how it's so nice to know. I mean, this is really information that will help keep your flock happy, healthy, and you wealthy, and eggs as well as chickens for quite a long time. So,
yeah,
I think you ought to do a good idea.
Yeah, try to get one next time we're out there. Stop by the lab, shake his hand, put a face to a name, and do one of these live. How awesome would that be?
Wear gloves.
And no Dremel tools. Yeah, we don't want to, like Dr. McRae said, we don't want to sling bacteria all over the lab and all over ourselves. That wouldn't be pretty. So no Dremel tools. We'll have to do the old-fashioned, he said no scalpel, so just a good sharp butcher knife, some good heavy scissors, and of course they say wear gloves. So folks, we'll be back right after this short break. Thanks for staying with us.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
What a great special guest segment that was today. Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today. And Pat, thank you very much for joining us today. I had a feeling and was hoping you would join us since it was such an awesome show that we had today. And you can listen to the archive, and you can even share this on your Facebook and Twitter page, the archive of the show. It will be archived and saved probably within 10 minutes after we get off the air here in about a minute and 30 seconds. And you can go back and listen to this as many times as you want for the next several years if you like. So it'll probably go down in one of the best archive shows, one of the best shows we've had. I know it's one of my top five I was discussing in the chat room. So, Pat, thank you very much for joining us. Thanks, all of you, for joining us in the chat room. Don't forget, tomorrow is Fun Friday, tons of prizes to give away, and we'll announce how you can enter this December Chicken Coop Contest, where you'll have a chance to win this beautiful coop valued at well over $600 with shipping to your location. Pat, take it away, my friend.
Okay, thanks so much, Andy. Well, our special guest today was Dr. Bruce Carlson of going over narcropsy or how to do an autopsy on your chicken at home to really find out what might be wrong with it. Of course, all our chat room chickeners were pretty lively today, too. Thanks for clucking along and all these incredible comments and insights. And blogtalkradio.com provides the radio, the chat, and the video services. Andy Snyder is the Chicken Whisperer, the creator of the show, and, of course, the Wind beneath our wings, which is why we can see inside a chicken so far. I'm Pat Foreman, and from all of us, may the flock be with you, close the chicken, evermore.
Oh.